Hello, this is Will Your Werewolf, the host of Werewolf the Podcast. I am currently giving you an autobiographical depiction of my life through prose. You're joining me on episode 17, where I am now working for the British Army as an undercover werewolf. I'm going to tell you about some of my jobs that I had to do. So, if you'd like to support the show, there is a link down in the description that will let you support the show. And thank you for the person who said I should call this a podcast. I get it. A podcast, yeah, like, because wolves have pads on the bottom of their feet and stuff. But, yeah. Anyway, getting back to it. Episode 17. Getting Al Capone-ish to talk. The gangster had finally told all. He had ratted on his bosses. He had given all the details required to bring down them and their organisation. Frankly, it was all a little dull. I was again the last straw to gather the information needed. In this case, I had not used my wolfy self to tease it out of him, but the simple, horrific tortures that humans seem unable to carry out on other humans. Unlike humans, I like my work, so the slow breakdown both physically and mentally of the big, fat, greasy gangster was fun. Most would not be able to stomach what was just an enjoyable part of my day. I'd even brought my favourite coffee mug as part of my kit. World's best torturer, it had written on it. He was a jerk from New Jersey. His hair was black and slicked back, and a thick accent was difficult for me to decipher. I was not sure he was even speaking English at first, but I did get used to it after a bit of time with him until he went quiet. Right, I'm going to attempt an accent. Please don't kill me for this. Who'd you think you are, bub? You ain't gonna get me to blab. I'm of Italian blood. We don't blab on our own. He was quite animate in his seat, and I could see his discomfort at being restrained. You's made a mistake here. I seen all of yous. All of yous are dead. Your wife is dead. Your mama's dead. Everyone you ever spoke to is dead. He finished his statement by spitting in my face. He was a living cliche. I smiled, wiping the spit from my cheek onto the back of my hand and then into my mouth. It tasted of tobacco and garlic. His face was filled with disgust, and he tried to back further into his chair. He had gone very quiet after I'd simply eaten his spit. He did not know what to do after my reaction to the huge insult of him, you know, spitting in my face. A calm, uncaring response was not what he wanted. I kept smiling at him as I walked towards him. I could sense a drop in his confidence as he tried to work out what the fuck he would do next. I hoped he realised at this point that he was done, although he seemed to lack intelligence, so I thought it may take a while for him to get to the point of no hope. He changed tack as I readied my tools. I was focused on my work. Fenrir, my posit, sat directly in front of the guy as the man watched with horror. I could flick my attention from Fenrir's viewpoint to my own, keeping a secret eye on the man without him knowing. A lot of this preliminary psychological work was setting the scene and beginning that aspect of the torture. What you doing here, man? I can make you rich beyond your dreams, brother. Why are you working for these palookers? Fenrir was laughing at him at this point. I've heard this accent before on TV, Will, but never believed that it would be really like this. Is this really how these guys talk? Do his family think that this is normal? I smiled, but not at the man at the posit. The man must have thought I was laughing at him. You laughing at me, bub? Just let me get out of here and we'll duke it out like man to man, he shouted. Fen laughed, so I laughed. Yous wouldn't be laughing if I was free, my man, he said. I was suddenly stood next to him. I'd moved so fast he had no time to react. I had a scalpel in my hand, and the scalpel blade was resting on the cornea of his eye. I wiped it smoothly over its surface before he even had time to blink. He went instantly still. There was no sound, no movement, no nothing. I was in his vision, and I smiled. Please, only speak when I ask you to. This is going to be an horrific business already. You will be cut, ripped, hurt, burned, beaten, and battered. Believe it or not, I can make it harder or easier for you. I really can. I will give you a quick taste of the misery. I will give you... Oh, this treatment is not to make you talk in any way. Honestly, this is just for your own education. I lowered the scalpel blade to touch his chest and slashed it back and forth with such speed and ferocity that he could not keep his eyes up with the movement of the blade. I only cut very shallowly into the flesh, just through his shirt and the top layer of skin. He screamed and yelled at me to stop, but I continued because it was fun to see how fast I could go. The blade was flashing over the surface of his chest and abdomen. Blood, flesh and cotton flew and formed a slight red mist as I worked. "Stop! Stop! Please stop it!" turned into crying mumbles. I eventually stopped. I think I'd made my point. He looked at me, but it was a blank stare now. No cocky jibes, just a lolling head that was just on the edge of sensibility. I needed him awake and aware, so I took a litre of rubbing alcohol and poured about half of it on the open cuts of his chest. Unsurprisingly, he woke up screaming blue murder. It was wonderful. The alcohol must have been excruciating on the cuts, but it had a bonus effect of causing the vasodilation of the bleeding vessels, and because of this, the loss of blood slowed. He now lay in a tattered shirt on the dentist's chair. His messed up flesh matched his messed up shirt. In fact, the blood, flesh and the shirt material were a little difficult to distinguish. This was so much fun. He was now aware of me again. His eyes were bulging and full of fear. I pointed to the bottle of alcohol. His head turned towards it. I gave him some time to read the label. On taking quite a while to read the label, he then looked back at me. I took my lighter from my pocket, flicking it open and producing a very naked flame. My face was behind the fire. I gave a big smile and nodded at him, flourishing the Zippo near him. He soon realized the flame and the alcohol threat, and he panicked once more. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Sadly, after that simple act, he had been incredibly easy to break. It was so disappointing. I mean, this was supposed to be one of those mafia hard men, those that would rather die than become a dirty rat. I'd read this guy's resume of violent crimes. I mean, he was on a par with me if it was all true. Well, on a par, but not of the same caliber of... Obviously, so I didn't expect him to be what these gangsters say, add the thick Jersey accent if you can. A pussy. I can't do it. I'd taken his nails from his fingers at first. Gosh, did he scream. I mean, it was hilarious in that accent of his. Fenrir, my posit, was just about to wee himself. Well, if he could. Then I took the nails from his toes. I did not need the usual pliers that the torturer uses. I could lift them off with a handy extendable claw by slowly pushing the tip of the talon beneath the nail. If I was careful, it would gradually separate the nail from the nail bed as it extended, tearing them slowly apart. Then using a flicking motion, I could rip it from the toe. I'd remove three of them cleanly first try. The others, well, they took a little more pulling and tearing to remove. He hadn't liked it, and he was willing to talk after removing six fingernails, but I needed to get some symmetry with my OCD before I was ready for him to blab. Once all the nails were removed, I allowed the two detectives in. He then promptly gave the detectives everything they needed to know. What a disappointment. A lightweight. We, me and Fenn, just sat there behind him in disgust, slowly cleaning up. "Now yous get that psycho away from me. I'll remember your face, man. You will never be able to live a normal life again, you faggot," he monologued. I smiled, nodded, and stuck out my tongue while looking at him. Childish, yeah, but fabulous fun. The officer then left to go over the info in another room. This was a cosmic mistake on their part. Their mistake was to leave him here with me because I accidentally removed his eyelids and lips with a scalpel for fun. Maybe I should have held off until they got back to me, but I've got ADHD, so I was bored. It's not my fault. It's a medical condition, and they left him here. I was unsupervised. Technically, it's their fault. Just saying. He was yelling and saying he'd done all that he was asked, and I needed, you know, but I needed to continue with my artwork. I mean, this wasn't all about him, was it? Selfish bastard. All the better to see you with, my dear, I quoted at him as I sliced. You have to try and make your clients laugh. He didn't. Obviously not his sense of humour. It takes a steady hand to get the eyelids cut off correctly and in one piece. A firm grip has to be held on the head, otherwise they wiggle too much. This tends to be the reason I do it first, as the lack of blood and sweat on the skin gives a firm grip for delicate work. The noises he made as I removed the lids were incredible. Can you imagine the horror of watching someone slice off your eyelids? You wouldn't be able to look away, would you? Get it? No, look away. You couldn't look away, could you? Because I was... His eyeballs were the only things that could move as I held his head. They followed the path of the slicing scalpel, the blade sliding over the smooth surface of the eyeball, lifting the lid and cutting it neatly. This is a difficult thing to do, people. Imagine having to hold his head still and work with a sharp blade in the other, like a surgeon, but I was better. Also, I would have to stop every so often to put down the blade and rinse the blood from his orbits, otherwise he couldn't see the work that I was undertaking for him. It was a shame it was over so quick, but now he could not escape seeing anything else. As long as I kept his eyes damp. No closing his eyes and going to any happy places. Stay here with me. In mine. I then managed to remove his lips in a perfect O, with no breaks in the flesh. It was the first time I'd managed that, and I wore the result as a bangle on my right wrist. Oh, I only did this after he'd taught. I'm not a fucking idiot, although I've made that mistake in the past. You soon learn it's really difficult to understand a lipless man. The whistle of his lipless mouth was, well, to be honest, now it was fucking annoying as he breathed. So I gripped his upper incisors between finger and thumb and tried to wrench them out. It didn't really work as they just, like, snapped and broke into small bits that he nearly choked on. It stopped the annoying whistle, though. The two detectives came back into the room, focusing on the paperwork in their hands and the heated conversation they were having. As they got to me, I'd masked the man's body by the simple sort of thing of standing in front of it so they couldn't see the mess sitting there. As they got closer, I felt a little bit shifty about my actions, but I stepped out of the way so they could see what had happened. I said, "This happened while you were out? I hope you don't mind. I was bored and had nothing to do." I pointed at the macabre face in the chair. Both their jaws dropped, and there was silence and disbelief for the first few moments. He can probably still write if we need more info from him, I said. I have to admit, I was a little embarrassed at this point. One of the men threw up his mighty chunder going everywhere on the spot. The other looked at me and pointed his hand to the man in the chair holding a pencil. "What the hell? What have you done, you animal?" he stuttered. Now, normally I'm quite calm, but this upset me a little. I mean, I know I should not have done it. I mean, they had to realise that this was their fault. They had left me with nothing to do and unsupervised. So I made eye contact with the rude detective and asked him nicely, "Do you want to be next? You judgmental idiot." I emphasised my sentence, holding a pointy thing from my pointy thing kit, the pointy bit doing the emphasising. The more perceptive detective, that's a great rhyme, reached out for his partner and grabbed his jacket at the elbow and started to drag him away from me slowly. I could see by his demeanour that he thought I would now murder them. I was pretty sure I was not. But who knew? Things change. I don't think that even I knew if they, you know, I was going to kill them or not. I was quite upset, though. I was perturbed, to say the least. Will, He did not mean anything by it. It was our fault. All the blame goes on our shoulders. He was just shocked. He's never seen such a wonderful bit of work. You know, the first time people see your work, they react very emotionally. It's your gift. I smiled and nodded with a emotion thanks. I knew he was talking shit, but I appreciated the bull that he was talking, so I continued to clean the blood off my sharp toys. I get it, I said. It's okay. You know, he just lost his mind a little, I said, looking at the meat in the chair. Beauty can really make you react very strongly. I gave a long sigh and folded my arms as I looked upon the devastation of the former gangster. Turning back to the rude detective, I made a point. Hey, man, I forgive you for your outburst. Emotions are strong things, but mess up again and I will leave you worse than this. In your home, out at Rosebank, Clifton Avenue, with your kids, Beatrice and Noah. I'll also cut your eyelids and their eyelids off, so they can see Daddy in a whole different fucking way. I smiled at him. He just stood there. He didn't know what to do. His face dropped, and he looked at the floor. And he slowly started reaching for his gun. I smiled, trying to get eye contact. This could be fucking brilliant. Come on, John, said the other policeman as he held his partner by the hand and tried to remove the visibly wobbled man from the room. Let's get out of here and leave Will to clean his kit. I let them go. I let them almost get to the door, listening to the man being led mumble to the other. I heard it all. All he was saying, and it wasn't nice, and it was about me. So just as they got to the door, I shouted, "Stop now! He has to apologize to me before he goes." They stumbled to a halt. I pointed at the mumbling man very dramatically. I said, "He has to apologize to me." The man helping his friend looked at him in the eye and nodded. The other guy looked destroyed. He had tears building in his eyes and the stress lined his face. I could see that he was dealing with the lack of fairness in this position. The fact that I had all the power and that power was killing him while I was getting off on it, which I was. I'll only ask one more time. Then I will rip him to pieces. I now pointed at the wobbly detective. I'll tear him into tiny parts and then I'll feed them to you. I smiled, pointing at the nice, friendly police person. Apologize, I ordered. The man who was the shaking focus point for my mental abuse looked at me. He had become a crippled, pathetic waste of life. He tried to speak. Nothing came. He licked his lips and tried again. I'm really sorry. Sorry, Will, he muttered. There. That was okay, huh? Thanks. I was only messing with you anyways. I actually like you too. My posture and body language became friendly once more. Oh, and can you get me a coffee, please? Flat white, thanks. The two men then left, one supporting the other. The nice, supportive detective came back with my coffee about 15 minutes later. I sniffed it for tampering, you know, for spit and stuff, but it was clean. He then asked me to finish the job, leaving the victim alive but unable to communicate. They wanted me to make the session look like some kind of gang world type of hit, you know, that would offer a warning. They wanted me to commit an act so brutal that it would put fear in those hardened by years of living in a world of violence themselves. So I sat and thought about what to do. The man's face was already a horror show, but it needed more. I needed to get myself in the zone. I started pacing up and down in front of the chair, back and forth, back and forth. My head was full of what I had done in the past, but I would try to surpass that. I started slapping myself and yelling my wants. Come on, monster. Come on, torture. Come on, the pain. I stopped directly in front of the slobbering ghoul ululating in his chair, and I grabbed him by his long, luscious hair and brought my nose to his. I looked deep into his forever open eyes and started to scream as loud as I could into his pitiful visage. I was impressed. He still had the wherewithal to try and flinch away. The exhilaration now was phenomenal. This was better than any drug. As the scream died out, I let go of his mane and knelt in front of him. My chin had dropped to my chest, and I laughed and smiled and told him that the next few minutes were going to be extraordinary for him and for me. I thanked him for his part in this. Tears sprang from my eyes as I looked at him. I shook him by his damaged hand and thanked him again. I would be ready to finish a masterpiece of artwork that would always be remembered. I selected something fun from the kit. It was a small blowtorch, you know, the kind that you caramelise your food with. I lit the gas and gently wafted it over his scalp. I allowed it to singe his hair first and then gently blister his skin. The stench of the burning hair was repugnant. Still, the result was pleasant destruction of his form. He desperately tried to move his head away from the heat and the pain. The noises he produced were eulogies of pleasures, screams and moans, the very sounds of those burned in hell, I imagine. I next deafened him using a Phillips screwdriver. I find they're much better for doing this than a normal flathead screwdriver. Bursting his eardrums on both sides of his head and forcing it just a little deeper to damage his ossicles. If you don't know what those are the tiny bones in the middle ear. He screamed in what for him was now a silent scream, but to me was a beautiful song, although he was getting somewhat hoarse from the damaging volume he was producing. I manipulated and twisted the end of the screwdriver in his ears, scrambling the contents of it pretty thoroughly. I still wonder what sensations he got from this. Was it just pain, or was it a mix of grinding and crunching sounds as I broke up those little bones? The noise he created as I did this racked his body, and he shook and went into shock. It was amazing to think that he could not hear himself. I suppose he would have felt sound ripple through his chest cavity and throat. The noise was inhuman. It sounded somewhat strange. He had no lips, so it was really odd. There was no termination of the sound at the end of the noises. He just uttered, it just stopped, you know. Instead of "argh," and then lips not to make a sound, it was "ah." Lips do a lot to round out your speech, and I'd not realised. He still stared at me, though, through blood-soaked and lidless eyes. Well, he didn't have a choice, did he? The stare was so intense and doll-like that I really had no idea how much he could see now, as I suppose those eyes were, you know, dry and irritated without the ability to blink. I hope he could still see something of me. I am a magnificent bastard. I kept rinsing his face down with water every so often. I hope that, you know, kept him a little bit so that he could see and everything. He was very mobile in the chair, even though he was securely tied. Jerky movements, consistent jerky movements. I thought he may be convulsing, but I think he was just out of control. Eventually, he calmed and looked at me. I mimed his flappy screaming reactions back to him. Oh, how Fenn and I laughed. He seemed to have no sense of humour, though, the guy himself. Just so serious. Eventually, I got a little bored with the noisy man. Honestly, there's only so much yelling I can take. They have no consideration for my sensitive ears. And do you know what I'm going to get for my torture kit? I'm going to get some earplugs for the next job. You see, I'm always learning. As he opened his mouth wide to let go of one of his pain yodels, I just had enough. I wrenched the lower jaw, ripping it downwards. I felt it break on the left side and dislocate with a pop on the right. His noise now changed due to his injury, uncontrollable and brutalized, a beautiful sound that issued from his lipless orifice. Sadly, he passed out from the pain. I quickly pumped a little morphine into him so he would not pass out with the pain again. I also gave him a little cocktail of my own, insulin and adrenaline, just a little bit. He woke in response to the morphine. He became bleary-eyed zombie as he absorbed the opiates into his ravaged system through the cannula in his left arm, but he was now wide awake with it. The other arm still had the empty plasma bag hooked into its cannula, and it looked like I may need to give him some more fluids to survive the next few minutes. I kind of hope I'd not gone too far with the damage. It would be bad if he died from blood loss at this point. Not very professional looking, but to be honest, who's going to tell me off? I didn't think that he would ever be able to hear or speak again if he survived, but he could still maybe write or maybe do sign language or something like that. You know, gangsters throwing gang signs, man, like, you know, like gangsters, like Crips and... Sorry. I looked through the kit that I had for the interview process. In the kit was a hammer. One side of the head was flat and the other rounded. Nice. I weighed it in my hand and gave it a couple of hefts, as it were. It was, honestly, it was a beautiful weight. I took his right hand, which he pathetically tried to wrench back from me. No, I said, stroking his forehead and reaching for his hand again. Give it here, you big silly man. As I stroked his head and smiled at him, he looked at me with an imploring, lidless stare. Oh, he tried to say, bless him. It took me a few moments to realise this was him saying no, but it sounded like oh. He couldn't pronounce the N with, you know, with his damaged jaw. Again, I was amazed, you know, how much of a difference it makes. I took the hand and pinned it by the wrist gently to the table, and starting at the tips of his index finger, I worked my way down it. I would rhythmically hit each chosen spot using the Queen classic, I want it all, as my soundtrack and punctuation for a timed stroke. I would hit each chosen spot on his finger a few times until I got the crunch of bone that I wanted. Following this hit, with just one more strike to finish the crushing job. After each spot had been worked, I moved to another half an inch down to repeat the action. I remind myself of, have you ever seen a piano tuner? Yeah, the strings being the fingers, the note off key being issued from the man's wrecked throat. I continued methodically through the rest of his hand, only realising after breaking the last knuckle of the pinky that simply snipping off his thumbs would have sufficed. I was wasting time. Although, as the beautiful John Lennon said, the time you have enjoyed wasting is not wasted time. Once I'd finished with his hand, I lay it on his lap and got out what was just an ordinary pair of secateurs. I love that word. I made sure he saw them before I used them, giving them a couple of squeezes in front of him. His eyes followed the sharp tool as I brought it down and let him watch as I clipped off his thumb of his other hand. It was a little bit messier as the secateurs took a lot of effort to get through the joint at the base of the thumb. It's a pretty sturdy, you know, strong joint, and it led to a lot of blood loss. So I sealed the wound with adrenaline from a bottle in my kit. It's useful in constricting cut vessels at the surface of the skin. The man had passed out, so smelling salts were wafted below his nose to shock him awake. He woke and shook his head and drooped. Oh, fuck, he's dead. Again, I walked to the door and asked the two waiting officers for a medic. Apparently, the medic wasn't available anymore after the last time he came in, so I had to go back and hopefully wait for the man to awake. I walked back to the seat and sat on just there, wiping my hands on my apron, and then suddenly he mumbled and turned his head. There was a knock at the door, and one of the detectives was waiting there for me. He's got to be dropped off in the next 10 minutes, Will, he told me. Okay, I said. I've nearly finished. I looked around the room for the next bit of joy-promoting kit. Quarter-inch plastic pipe, barbed wire, and petroleum jelly. I took the pipe and the piece of barbed wire and noticed that the barbed wire would thread through the pipe. I would give him a barbed wire necklace. But no, I've got a better idea. I took the petroleum jelly and smeared it all over the end of the pipe. Then going back over to the man, I pulled his trousers down and his extremely wet underpants to expose his backside. At least he'd not messed himself. You know, urine is sterile, right? I separated his knees wide and rolled him onto his right side. I now had the access I needed. I showed him the tub and started to add extra lube in front of him. His panic took a while to arrive. In his state, he took some time to work out what was going to happen. I mimed the procedure once more and gave him a smile and a thumbs up. Sorry, man, you can't do that, can you? I said. No thumbs, I laughed. He shook his head and struggled a little as I inserted the tip of the pipe, pushing it a good 6 inches into him. He hardly responded after that, only quivering a little at the invasion. I slipped the barbed wire into the pipe and pushed it through until it couldn't be pushed through any further. Then I gently removed the pipe. sliding it over the barbed wire that stayed placed inside the sphincter, inside the anus. Well, that was going to be an interesting problem for the surgeons to solve. How would they remove that without causing catastrophic damage? I think that was definitely the gangland violence level they wanted. I walked over to the door and knocked. The officer answered and looked me in the eyes. "I'd get that ambulance sorted out now if I were you," I said, wiping my hands on the apron. "Oh, and can you book me either an Uber or a taxi, thanks?" I looked in the mirror by the door and there I was with a blood-spattered, happy smile. "I think he's ready. Oh, and can I get a copy of the CCTV tape for my collection, please? Thank you." That's the end of the episode. If you would like to support the show, there is a link down in the description below that says support the show. If you'd like to buy the book, please do. Oh, and love you. Bye.